Testing.
You have a better one. I want yours.
All right, thank you very much, everyone. All right, I'm gonna go ahead and go on the record on mine. Clerk's office, do you have us on over there? All right. Good morning, everyone. We're in Hernando County on December the 6th. It is currently, 8:28 in the morning. And we are hearing petition number 134. Petitioner, please introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Eric Marrero. I'm a senior consultant here at Ryan LLC on behalf of the taxpayer Quikrete, doing business as Blackstone.
All right. I see your name on the front of the package, of your package. Is Scott or Catherine going to be with us as well?
Unfortunately not, due to other conflicts.
No, it's okay. I saw their names here as well. Property appraiser, please introduce yourself for the record.
Melissa Cullen, property appraiser's office.
Kevin Johnston, property appraiser's office.
And Stephen Ice from Special Magistrate. Good morning, everyone. Okay, so I have a petitioner name noted as Flagstone Pavers. I have a parcel key number noted as 1370368. Petitioner, have you, please raise your right hand. Do you swear affirm to the evidence about to give you the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth?
Yes.
I do.
Thank you very much, everyone. Okay, so bear with me one second. Property appraiser's office, do we have, what page is your justice asked and taxable numbers?
On page one of my packet, which is the fourth page.
Got it, but I have to subtract the 25,000 again, right?
No, it's correct in the taxable, yes.
All right. I can be taught. Okay, so was there a timely evidence exchange?
Yes.
Okay, so if there's no objection from either parties, I do have a very large stack of information from you, petitioner. It looks like I have, so the packages are considered admissible, barring any statements that we have in the next few seconds as I start describing it. I have a package from the property appraiser. Did the petitioner request it in writing from you? Does he have it?
Yes.
Okay. I have your main package, petitioner, which is, looks 60, 70 pages long. And then I have what looks like about 500 pages of probably cell comps. That sound right, petitioner?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So I have a just value note as $10,413,741, assessed of the same and taxable at $10,388,741. Property appraiser's office, please support your assessment.
Okay, if you look at page one, which is the...
I'm sorry, what are we dealing with today? What kind of petition, TPP are we dealing with?
This is an industrial manufacturing and sales property. They sell pavers and they build concrete retaining walls and things like that.
Thank you.
So if you look at page one of the case synopsis, like we said, the owner's Flagstone Pavers. It's located at 9070 Old Cobb Road in Brooksville. The date of value is January 1st of 2021. And this is an industrial manufacturing and sales property. If you look at pages two and three, I have aerial photographs. Pages four and five.
Is the property operational?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Pages four and five are building photographs. On page six, under site inspections, we were given a tour of the facility and equipment in October of 2018. Doug Mack, the commercial field appraiser, left a business card to schedule an appointment for an inspection for the TPP and for a new commercial structure this past year, and we were never contacted.
Okay.
And I just showed below that the permits, which is why he had initially went out there to talk to them, because a permit was finalized. On page seven is a description of how we considered the eight criteria, which is also included in Exhibit A. On page eight is a discussion of the three approaches to value. We considered the sales comparison approach. However, we did not complete the sales comparison approach due to the lack of adequate comparable sales. We did complete a cost approach. We considered the income approach, but we did not complete the income approach due to the value influence from intangibles. On page 9, you can see how we arrive at the assessed value. We use the original cost and multiply it by an index factor for a replacement cost new. And we take the replacement cost new and multiply it by a depreciation percent good for an assessed value. In Exhibit B, we've included a sample DR405. At the bottom of page 9, you'll see that their return was filed timely on March 31st. It included the asset category, age, description, original cost, the life used, and depreciated value. They filed $16,231,268 in total original costs, compared to when we entered the information in our system, we came up with an original cost of $16,231,282. And their DR405 and related documents are included in Exhibit C. We used the cement manufacturing index factor, and we have a table for the index factors included in Exhibit D. And based on the petitioner's DR405, at that time we were not supplied, nor could we tell if they used any index factors.
Okay. You mean in their analysis?
Yes, when they filed their DR405.
Okay.
On page 10, you can see that
I'm sorry, I don't necessarily know the codes by name, that and that's just their regular filing for their...
Excuse me?
The DR405 is... I'm sorry, I don't have the code. The
oh, that is right. That is the, when they initially file, that's the Department of Revenue form that they will file on.
Okay, for original costs.
Yes, and then they include any of the information that we would need that should show, you know, index factors, how they came up with their value,
okay,
so on and so forth.
Okay.
On page 10, I've shown how we came up with our life expectancy guidelines. We utilized the Florida DOR life expectancy guidelines, and I've shown a listing of what the lives are. And then we also use Marshall Valuation Service, and I've also shown a listing of what the lives are for that. And those two different tables are included in Exhibits E and F. And we've reconciled between those two services to come to our own economic life tables, which are shown on page 11.
Is this page 11 just a sampling?
The page 11 is our actual tables, and instead of showing you the pages of our tables, I've shown you all the assets lives for their actual filing.
Okay, so amusement, golf carts, amusement equipment, recreational?
Yes.
They have some of that?
Yes.
Golf carts, I would imagine.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
On the bottom of page 11, our depreciation, for our depreciation, we utilize the untrended depreciation schedule supplied by the Florida Department of Revenue, which is shown in Exhibit G. And that last sentence there that says the petitioner and our office use the same depreciation factors, which is a typo that should be removed.
Okay. So, which sentence is that? On page 11, right?
Page 11, the last sentence from on the paragraph that's the second from the bottom.
Okay, got
the
it.
Petitioner and HCPA use the same depreciation factors.
Did not, then. Did not use this instead of used?
Correct.
Okay. Okay.
After adjusting the original cost by the index factors and applying depreciation, HCPA arrived at an assessed value of $10,413,741. Flagstone Pavers reported a fair market value at $10,219,522, which is a difference of $194,219.
Is that the petitioner's estimate of assessed value?
No.
Okay.
They have, let me go to their, let me refer you to their return here for a second.
You don't have to, I'm sure he'll have a discussion.
Okay.
So that looked, it looked like you were pretty close. If that was the case, you were pretty close, so.
Well, they did, if, and I'm going to go ahead and refer you. So if you look at, if you look at their return that starts on page 21, this is what I was supplied with. And from going through their evidence, it appears now that they're claiming that it should be more.
Okay, so they are adding an economic obsolescence factor?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm sure I'll hear more about it when they present. Okay.
So you can see on page 12 that I have shown the just and assessed value and deducted the $25,000 exemption for a taxable value of $10,388,741. The tangible personal property record card and the real property record card are included in exhibits H and I. In arriving at the assessment of the tangible personal property, we considered the 8 criteria. We also follow the Florida statutes, which are identified in Exhibit J, and the Florida DOR standards of measure, which are shown in Exhibit K. We considered all three approaches, and we utilized the cost approach because we felt that it provided the most reliable indicator of just value for the subject.
Okay.
And that's all I have for right now.
Petitioner, please support that you're over-assessed.
Thank you, and I'd like to thank everybody for their time. I would like to apologize if I drag a little bit during my presentation. It is an hour early for me, so it's 7:30 my time, and I'm just waiting for that caffeine to kick in. But to kind of start off to explain all the evidence that was provided to you. So about the first 151 pages that were presented to you is a narrative packet. I'm not going to go through the whole narrative packet. You'll see we have our cover page, and on page on the next page over, we have Orion's letterhead right on top of it. Could you confirm that you see that in front of you?
Okay, hold on one second. Sorry. I see your table of contents, yes, and your line Orion letterhead. And your estimate of value then is $6,149,412?
That is correct. So that assessed value that we came up with considered a COVID adjustment of 17%.
Is that a just, is that your just value? So your taxable would be minus $25,000 from that, or is that after the $25,000 deduction?
That's prior to a $25,000 reduction. That's our market value, so not the taxable value, correct.
Okay.
And then we do have a pre-COVID adjustment utilizing our market drive depreciation tables of $7,399,114. So you'll see both of those on that page with the Ryan letterhead on it.
Okay.
Awesome. So now I'll take you down to our table of contents. Of course, you're going to see everything we're going to make references to in my initial presentation. What you'll see pages 1 through about 31 or 32 is our main portion of evidence that I'm going to refer to when initially presenting our value. You'll see we include Appendix A, Appendix B, based on all of the points that I'm going to hit, just that provides additional information supporting each topic that I bring up. And then, of course, we do have our asset detail on page 145, showing how we got to our requested value, simply utilizing market drive depreciation tables. And then, of course, I will have supporting documentation on our COVID adjustment as well. So taking you down to page 1, I do want to provide a brief executive summary. This executive summary shows what we're going to be hitting a summary of what we're
Let's look at very briefly. So this facility produces essentially paver stones. Is that its primary production?
My understanding is it's pavers and concrete, I guess, materials for residential and commercial construction.
Okay.
Basic pavers.
Okay. Is it primarily residential or primarily commercial or unknown, really?
I'm not sure. I know on their website they market for both.
Okay. All right. In general, residential during the COVID year went up. A lot of people are investing in their homes. I believe Lowe's and Home Depot did pretty well. I guess I'm wondering if there's a large COVID adjustment, if this property produces goods that are not in low demand by consumers even during COVID. Why is there a COVID adjustment applicable? You can get to that as you're going along, but you know, I can definitely see there are certain industries that were definitely hurt during COVID. It's likely to be a short-term effect, whether that is 1 year or 3 years or however many years is debatable. But you know, I don't think anyone's expecting COVID to be there forever. But this particular industry does not seem like one that was necessarily directly hurt. So just touch on that when you get to that part, please.
I sure will. But I don't want to get too far ahead of myself because then I'll confuse you.
It's fine.
Just kind of with the flow of my presentation that I got. So I will get to that. I can guarantee you it.
Thank you.
Of course. So starting off on page one, it's just a summary of kind of some points we're going to talk about. You know, we're showing how the property appraiser's assessed value does not represent the just value of the property. The property appraiser has not properly considered all eight factors as delineated with Florida Statute 193.011. Property appraiser has provided sufficient evidence that their opinion of value complies with professionally accepted appraisal practices. This appeal document will demonstrate the need for an economic obsolescence component to be included within the valuation and will quantify the amount that should be applied. Jurisdiction is required to consider all three forms of obsolescence, physical, functional, and economic. The depreciation tables do not include all form of obsolescence. And what the petitioner has provided here today is they're utilizing market-derived depreciation scheduled cost approaches. And then we've also provide additional supporting opinion of value methodology, which do take an age-of-life approach, just to kind of provide an example. And then we've also provided additional supporting documentation regarding our COVID-19 request as well, as we just talked about. So, of course, to go down to page three, we do list the sources we reference. You'll see we reference the Florida statutes, Florida DOR, USTAP, ASA, Appraisal Institute, Willamette, and Marshall and Swift Valuation Services. And to just kind of start us off, of course, we're here to talk about just value, which is synonymous with fair market value, which is defined as the price at which a property, if offered for sale in an open market with reasonable time for a seller to find a purchaser, transfer in cash or its equivalent under prevailing market conditions. And, you know, Florida Statute Section 193.011 talks about how the property appraiser shall take into consideration the following eight factors. The two I'm going to focus on in the interest of time are 1 and 6. 1, which is the present value of cash of the property, which is the amount a willing seller would pay a willing seller. And then 6, the condition of the said property. We also make references to 194.301 Florida statute, which is described by the VAB training manual as a important change to the Florida statute. You'll see that it talks about how the requirements placed upon the property appraiser regarding the approach to arriving at just value. The assessments must be arrived with complying at section 193.011. The assessments must be arrived by complying with professionally accepted appraisal practices, including mass appraisal standards, if appropriate. And 194.301 provides the provisions of this subsection preempt any prior case law that is inconsistent with this subsection. The VAB training manual also states the following. The one I just kind of want to focus on is judgment. Judgment is not a substitute for appraisal expertise, diligence, or objectivity. Sound appraisal judgment must be exercised in accordance with applicable legal criteria, including professionally accepted appraisal practices. Going on to page 5, we do make reference of the Darden v. Singh case. The only thing that I want to kind of point out about this case is it's kind of held property appraisers to a higher standard. How property appraisers need to look to the market, and they must show how they utilize professionally accepted appraisal practices. Going on to page 6, we do touch upon the cost approach, and I unless I'm overstepping, I do believe we all kind of know the base of the cost approach, and I just want to hit upon a couple points that were stated by ASA, IAAO, and USTAP, and those were how they all discussed when utilizing a cost approach to mass appraisal. Mass appraisal requires the development of a valuation model capable of replicating the forces for supply and demand, identify and analyze the effects on the use and value of industry trends.
If it makes you feel any better, I have a master's degree in real estate appraisal, essentially, and I am an economist. But I'm actually an economist also and do a lot of international land policy and macroeconomics. So I do understand obsolescence. I do understand economic obsolescence quite well. So anyway, you don't necessarily have to go over all of the nitty-gritty unless you want to. But go ahead. Continue.
No, I appreciate that. It does make me go a little bit quicker through this. The only reason at the very beginning of my presentation, I do make a lot of references to USTAP, IAAO, and ASA directly, which is why I just stayed. But once we get through other portions.
I'm not trying to rush you. I'm just trying to, let you know who you're talking to, essentially.
I appreciate it. Thank you again. And then going into the depreciation table, we go on to page 7 talking about the Florida DOR tables, which are taken from or derived from Marshall Valuation Service. And a couple facts from these tables are, one, these depreciation tables are based on mortality. They are not a market-based study. And they were created in 1962, and they were created based off of the Iowa tables, which were created between the years of 1915 and 1930. And these depreciation facts, the index tables, because of course index tables update to consider inflation, but the depreciation factors haven't been updated, materially updated, since 1962. So these depreciation tables utilized by Marshall and Swift are very outdated.
Okay.
To talk about going over to page 9, we do make a couple references to utilizing a market-derived cost approach, which is what the petitioner is bringing forth here today. Of course, the petitioner's market-derived depreciation schedule does result in an opinion of value that reflects current market value of the subject property, and it substantiates the need for additional obsolescence when analyzing within the assessment. The IAAO and ASA both state that market-derived depreciation tables should be based on from the market. Not only that, Willamette provides the following three economic principles that form a basis of the cost approach for valuation that go on to page 10, where he talks about substitution, supply and demand, externality. And then going on to page 11, you'll see a number of bullet points that were derived from the IAAO and ASA when talking about market-derived data. I'll simply state one of each that are stated on here. One from the IAAO is developing depreciation tables from comparable sales. In mass appraisal is the primary method of estimating depreciation in the assessor's office. The ASA also states, goes on additionally to state from the IAAO, because the analysis is based on the used marketplace, the multiplier takes into consideration all forms of depreciation and obsolescence. And I will be skipping over a couple pages here, so bear with me. Of course, as I kind of stated, there's a lot of references to the IAAO, USTAP, Willamette, the statutes, but just in the interest of time and this presentation, I do want to take you to page 16, bottom of page 15, going on to 16. I just kind of want to give you a brief analysis of where we acquired our depreciation tables from. So in this section, going up to about page 20 or 21, you'll see a lot of information based on how we acquired this. We acquired these depreciation tables from an independent research firm known as PTRS. They're known as Property Tax Research Services. And what they do is, of course, they go out to the market, and they have since 2013, and they acquire sales data for various items in order to develop depreciation tables. As I stated, they were created in 2013 and have been updating their information on a yearly basis since. As an organization, they have nearly 9,000 data points and continue to grow. Of course, what I presented here for today, the original evidence that I submitted had additional sales data that the assessor's office wasn't able to open via the link that we supported them, so I had to split up the PDF into samples. So although it is voluminous, I do understand that. Please note those are only samples of what I was able to provide you for the asset classifications relating to the asset at the location.
Where are your samples? What page?
It's those about 500 pages.
Oh, that. Yeah, okay, sure. Your sales data. Okay.
Yeah, it's those sales data. PTRS is owned and operated by ASA accredited appraisers.
You went through that. PTRS is owned by who?
They're owned and operated by ASA accredited appraisers.
You said it so quickly, it sounded like you were saying it was owned by the ASA, but it's not. It's owned by
people that I think that caffeine hit in a little quicker than I assumed.
That's all right. That's okay. I was actually looking at PTRS as we spoke.
Yes. And of course, their work product performed in accordance with USTAP. So that's a little bit about the organization. Of course, our narrative provides additional information to them. And if you have any questions, please feel free to let me know. But I do want to take you through the remainder of our evidence. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe the next topic of conversation is COVID-19. That can be found on page 21.
All right. So I'm sorry. So you use the PTRS data to essentially for your sales comparison approach? Is that for different economic depreciation tables?
Those are different economic depreciation tables. So we utilize the sales data in order to develop these depreciation tables. And then we apply those depreciation factors based on similar assets at this location in order to arrive at our market value.
Got it. But so were you using the PTRS assets that they used, or is this 500 pages of data assets that you pulled and then made your determination on?
So we utilized the PTRS table, and then we classified them based on similar assets on the depreciation table they utilized. Or they supplied to us.
Right. So the 500 pages, it came from them or it came from your own analysis?
It came from PTRS.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All righty. So next, I will give you just a moment. I'm looking on page 21, and this references our obsolescence analysis for COVID. I'm going to give you just a second to get there. And then just let me know whenever both of y'all get there.
I'm on page 21. I've already halfway through the paragraph reading it.
Awesome. Of course, as you already stated from the beginning, you know, this is kind of the catastrophe of our time. COVID-19 hit a various number of industries, simply not limited to restaurants, hotels, anything to that extent. And definitely had an impact on every single industry, whether good or bad. I mean, there were some industries that were able to do well during this time. I mean, grocery stores did very well. But what we were able to do is we kind of did an analysis based on the industry. So what you're going to see.
Your economic analysis is based on all industries, or is it based on one industry? And if it's based on one industry, what industry did you define it to be?
And I will get to that, but I'll take you to
No rush. I'm just thought you were there already.
For sure. So we did an analysis based on the industry, and we looked at separate metrics. Of course, you'll see those metrics. You'll see revenue, industry value added, which if you're unfamiliar with industry value added, that is simply how much this industry affects the GDP of the country, establishment, employment, and of course, industrial production. Of course, those four first four metrics that we analyzed, we received from IBISWorld. If you're unfamiliar with IBISWorld, IBISWorld is simply a third-party source that analyzes industries and puts together briefs and collects operational and financial metrics. And then, of course, we got our industrial production analysis from the Federal Reserve. And what you'll see is we did a five-year analysis from 2014 to 2019 in order to get our prior five-year average growth. And then we did a year-over-year change, which is that fourth column from the left, or from the right, I apologize, from 2019 to 2020. The reason we did this was in order to determine if there was simply just a COVID-19 economic obsolescence impact, or if we needed to separate economic obsolescence based on prior year from the economic obsolescence impact on the year-over-year change. For example, if the prior five-year average growth simply increased, then the overall economic obsolescence impact would be directly related to COVID-19, right? If the prior five-year average growth decreased in any of these metrics, then you would see a difference between the total economic obsolescence impact and the net COVID economic obsolescence impact, because there would have been a decline. And that's how we did our analysis for a variety of industries. So that's the table analysis of how we determined.
I'm sorry. So you've got a year-over-year change, and I guess that's 19 to 20. Sure. Then you got a prior five-year average growth. What is the range of the prior five? What's the... I mean, which one is the current five-year growth, and what is the prior five-year growth is that, I guess, 2014 to 2019? Is that what you mean by the prior five-year growth?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. So, yes, 2020 was a bad year. Okay. But the value date is January 1 of 2021. So you, if you are applying the negative impacts in that one bad year, are you assuming that that is going to continue? Isn't that basically a base assumption? If you have a, if you found a 17% downward impact, I guess I'm not sure why you're not suggesting, if this, please correct me if I'm looking at this differently than you mean.
Right.
But, you know, okay, it's kind of like if the cap rates go up because risk, a short-term, if a short-term risk level happens, that causes, say, rent to go down or vacancy to go way up. If you put that into the cap rate for a real estate property, you're essentially building in a long-term, people say in perpetuity, that's not exactly true, but a long-term effect for what's likely or often a short-term issue. And I'm wondering why that might not be the case in this instance as well. So please, as you're going along, please let me know if I'm misunderstanding what you're representing, or why that's not true if I am understanding what you're representing.
Okay. Actually, if we could take a pause there, just to make sure I interpreted that question correctly.
Sure.
So what you're asking is, how do we know if this analysis is going to continue on, let's say, the next lien date for the 2022 tax year?
Well, I guess my point is, if 2019 to 2020, when we're in
right,
the middle of COVID-19, if your economic analysis for whatever industry this is, or all industries combined, if it showed a negative 17%, why shouldn't we think of that as a short-term aberration, because of COVID's not likely to be here forever? It is certainly not as bad, you know, on the lien date, we had vaccines coming out. That was known. They were known that they were almost finished at that point. So on the lien date, vaccines were about to hit the market, and everyone thought this was over, or soon to be over. It's actually not as over
right,
as anyone would have liked. But
why,
you know, the COVID year was bad across the world. But if you are showing a large impact based upon that factor, why does this data show that is a long-term effect instead of a 1 to 2 year effect?
This data doesn't show it's a long-term effect.
Okay.
And I can't go into that.
Okay.
But you know, the argument that I see on a daily, or not, I wouldn't say daily basis, for as long as I've been doing this, is that economic obsolescence has to be temporary. Economic obsolescence does not necessarily have to be temporary. It can have a specific impact on that specific tax year, which is, you know, a lot of the reason why we have lien dates. We're looking at the value of this asset based on those specific lien dates. And yes, you are indeed correct. Vaccines were starting to come out, and I have no objection to that end. But I mean, we're at the end of the year, and we're still not normal. We're on a new variant.
But where we sit here today is different. We have different information now than we did on January 1, 2021. So I'm backdating my brain to the lien date. I've been an appraiser almost all my life. So it's very easy for me to,
I agree with.
As of that lien date is our effect. And if you have a protracted or short-term negative impact, essentially, one way or another, you're doing a discounted cash flow. You're discounting the negative factors, or, you know, in some cases, you're discounting positive factors to a present value. Whether the economic impact that we're talking about is long-term, short-term, or somewhere in the middle, you analyze it and then you bring it down to a present value, and that's how you come to any value for anything, one way or another. Whether you mentally formalize that or not, I'm not sure if you follow that. I write theory for a living, so I actually kind of enjoy these analysis. So I apologize if I got too theoretical on you. That's what I'm looking at. I'm wondering why this isn't a short-term effect that you're essentially trying to capitalize into long-term, a long-term factor when it almost assuredly isn't. It can be argued how many years the negative effect is going to be. It can be argued how much the negative effect is going to be, and it can be argued what the discount rate should be.
Right.
But the argument that it's going to go on forever, there doesn't seem to be great evidence for that. So as you're going, you can touch on that as you go. But that's where my head is at, and it's on my recording as well. So I'll know when I'll be thinking about it when I'm writing the recommendation.
And I definitely understand that. And one note to kind of give you an idea where my team kind of stands on this is I completely agree this isn't a long-term effect. And that 17% that we are applying isn't necessarily going to apply to this property or this taxpayer this next year. This analysis that we are going to do based on the year-over-year change is going to change on the next upcoming lien date because, as you stated, things change.
Okay.
You know, at the end of the day, this could vary to this next year. And the analysis that my director is going to do on these properties is going to be different on this next upcoming year for the 2022 tax year. So I'm not sure if that was kind of the viewpoint you were taking on that. I do appreciate you taking the time to review it.
Well, I'm looking at your first page, and you're saying that there's a petitioner estimated COVID factor of 17%. You just showed me a chart where you did year over year, and you concluded to 17%. It does look like you're applying it as if it's in perpetuity, as opposed to the present value of a short or midterm effect. The number you're showing is the same in both places.
Right, it's the same in both places. So when you say on the total economic obsolescence impact and the net COVID economic obsolescence impact. Is that what you're saying is the same in both?
Well, I'm looking at your summary where you show the value on your, you know, page one essentially, and you have a petitioner COVID economic obsolescence adjustment of 17%, and on page 21 you go through an analysis where you come up with 17% based upon what happened in 2020. So I'm assuming those two numbers are related, and it's not just a coincidence that it's 17%.
No, it's definitely not a coincidence because we're looking at the 2021 tax year. So we're looking at the assets that were added in 2020.
Got it. All right.
Kind of why.
I think you know where my head's at on that. I'll stop beating that horse.
No, I appreciate it. I would like to take a little bit of a deeper dive analysis, but that's kind of where we're at with the table. Of course, if any other questions come up during it, please feel free to let me know.
There was one question that I did mention to you. I don't think you answered yet, and I want to make sure that you know that I'm still waiting for that one. And that was whether that your economic obsolescence chart is for all industries or one industry, and if it is for one industry, how did you define that one industry? I.e., is it applicable to the property in question?
Yes, and I still got that on my mind.
Got it. All right. Go ahead.
All righty, thank you very much. Just one second. My computer.
By the way, you're turning your head away from the microphone. When you turn your head away from the microphone, we can almost not hear you at all, just so you know in advance.
I apologize. I'm trying to get my computer running. It froze on me. Just one second.
Okay.
Alrighty, I think I got it going. So going on to the next couple of pages, as we go down to page 23, you'll see we saw how COVID-19 affected GDP nationally. The overall percentage of change in real GDP nationally was -3.5%. This was a sharp decrease from an average of 2.5% over the prior 3 years. When looking state specific, you'll see the overall percent change in real GDP for the state was -2.9%. This is a sharp decrease from the average 3.4% over the prior 3 years. And going on to page 24, it's at the bottom of page 23, on to page 24, you'll see the industry specific analysis that we did. This industry specifically relates to the analysis that my director did on those metrics that were provided. So the industry that we were looking at were non-durable goods. The overall percentage change in real GDP was -3.5%. This is a sharp decrease from an average 2.5% over the prior 3 years. Nationally, non-durable goods industry represented a -3.5%, which equates to a 2% negative impact on national GDP. And for the state of Florida, the industry represented a -0.07 of the state's 2020 GDP, which equates to a 2% of the negative impact on the state GDP. Continuing through our analysis, you'll see we make a lot of references.
I'm sorry. So you define the industry as non-durable goods?
Correct.
Which is like food, things that are consumed over a short period of time in an economic analysis. We're talking about pavers, right?
Yes. And the reason we did it that way is because of the taxpayer. I understand this specific location, but this specific location is owned by the taxpayer, Quikrete. And that is why we did the overall analysis of the industry for a variety of their locations. And this is what we were able to derive from that analysis.
Okay. All right. So the actual TPP is used to make things that are durable goods, but your analysis here was on non-durable goods for, I'm not sure why you did it that way. Were you suggesting it's because the non-durable goods are common in this location, in this city? I mean, I guess I'm not sure why you made that distinction, but it does seem like this TPP is producing durable goods, not non-durable goods. But go ahead.
Understood. So going through the remainder of our evidence on page 26, you'll see that there are a variety of ways of identifying economic obsolescence. The IAAO, ASA, and Willamette provide a non-exhaustive list of examples of how to identify economic obsolescence. There are a variety of different ways. There's industry economics, decrease in demand, reduced product, increase in cost reduction, or similar factors. They're simply not restricted to these factors. There are many different ways in order to analyze economic obsolescence. Going down to our alternative supporting opinion of evaluation methodology, going on to page 28, we do provide additional support that supports our market-derived appreciation tables. Here, we provide you an analysis on if we utilize the age life method. Something to note, we supply this in here because when you utilize the age life method, you're simply considering physical depreciation. And we do this to paint a picture of how much economic obsolescence or functional obsolescence is not being captured in the marketplace. So we do provide that analysis there for you here today. So from that pages 28 to about 31, and then 31 we just provide some additional information regarding value adjustment board hearing guidelines. You know, you have your standard of proof, and the standard of proof in an administrative review is the preponderance of evidence, which also means greater weight of evidence or more likely than not. And then the presumption of correctness in an administrative hearing, the property appraiser does not have a presumption of correctness, but must earn the presumption of correctness by proving by a preponderance of evidence that the just value assessment was arrived by complying with 193.11 Florida statute and professionally accepted appraisal practices, including mass appraisal standards, if appropriate. So with that, of course, the remainder of our evidence includes the appendices, providing additional supporting documentation on each topic point I did hit today, and then, of course, our valuation on the list of assets on these locations and how each asset was valued does begin on page 46.
I'm sorry, what was that? The last bit, page 46, you said?
146.
146, okay.
Correct.
All right. Is that it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you're primarily cost approach as well? I believe you said that early on. Okay.
It's defined as a market-derived cost approach.
Right, okay, correct. Okay, petitioner, property appraiser's office, rebuttal?
Yes, I just want to make some kind of generalized comments regarding their evidence. One thing I noticed is that they pointed out that in the considering the eight criteria, we did not consider the condition of the assets. As you have already been made aware, it's difficult for us to know the actual condition when, number one, it's not provided to us on their return when they file, and number two, when they will not give us access to the property to do an audit. So when that happens, we have to make the assumption that all assets are in average condition. So I just want to make you aware of that. I also felt that, throughout their evidence, they are claiming things that we have done right, we haven't done right, and so on and so forth. They hadn't even seen our evidence when they had submitted this, which is a little bit concerning to me that they were already making these assumptions. The next thing I want to touch on is COVID. So in the state of Florida, the governor did issue a 15-day slow the spread executive order. This county, no one was ever forced to shut down, and we did not really see the effects, in my opinion, like some other larger areas, you know, that were shut down, say like South Florida, Miami, and things like that. So one thing I decided to do was look at the Florida Department of Revenue sales use tax gross sales that were supplied with for this specific business. And Flagstone Pavers in 2019 reported gross sales at $33,842,957. And in 2020, $48,864,586, which was an increase of over 44% from 2019 to 2020. So my point with that is...
What are the suit numbers again, please? I'm writing down. Unless you're gonna hand me that, is it a short list? Have you read everything on the piece of paper?
Not yet, but okay. I can either give you that, or I can give you the. I have a caption of just that business of the Excel that DOR provides us.
Okay. Well, if you're not gonna ask to put it on the record, then I do want you to give me the numbers again, so I can write them down.
Let me know when you're ready.
Okay. Go ahead.
For 2019, $33 million. $842,957.
Okay.
For 2020, $48,864,586.
Do you have 18 as well?
I can pull it up here.
I'm just wondering. I was just wondering if you had it. That's all.
So petitioner,
do you note essentially increase in sales at the subject property? Did you build that into your analysis? Did you even know?
No, sir. We asked for this information from the property appraiser, but they stated that they weren't able to, even though we were the power of attorney.
I'm sorry, you asked for that information from the property appraiser?
Correct.
I would think you would ask that information from the petitioner, but, okay, all right. I believe, well, first, the property appraiser is just testifying this verbally. It's also kind of it's also rebuttal to your argument. I'm not sure if I saw anywhere in writing where you asked specifically for this specific piece of information. Information requests have to be pretty specific. Unless we're going to walk down the road of admissibility, I'm not going to go too far there. But this specific specific piece of data, one, is verbal testimony, and two, is actually rebutting your economic obsolescence. So it would qualify as rebuttal evidence if we walk down that road.
Understood.
Are you actually objecting to their verbal statement regarding your sales?
No, sir. No, sir. Okay. I'm not objecting to that verbal statement. I was just notifying because we did want to see their analysis based on related to COVID-19 to this subject property. But we weren't able to review that data. And I understand they're presenting this information verbally, and I have no objection.
Most appraisal offices they're doing mass appraisal. They're not necessarily doing property by property economic analysis. It's a very interesting topic of things to do as far as feasibility studies and economic studies go. I do actually enjoy them, but it's not something that's typically done in mass appraisal. It is one of the things that is important for a property appraiser to understand when it gets to a situation like this, which is a lot more like a fee appraisal, one-off appraisal as opposed to mass, as kind of what we're doing today.
Right.
But it's usually not gathered in advance of a hearing. Anyway, go ahead, Rebecca, continue.
Do you want me to touch on why I didn't give it to them? Okay.
Far be it from me to tell you how to suggest, how to support your value conclusion.
Okay. Well, in general, this is SUT data. I can't release my studies on every single property in the county because it's confidential. I could release it on this one, but I don't put it in packets because it becomes a confidentiality issue if there's a public records request made, so on and so forth. So I couldn't release it on every, you know, because we looked at a lot of it throughout the county. So just so you're aware, I can't release it because it's confidential. So to continue, I looked at that because I wanted to know if they were affected by COVID, being that they supply construction or paving equipment for residential and commercial properties. The market here for residential and commercial is booming. It didn't stop, you know, when COVID started. It still hasn't stopped. I'm seeing in commercial, just on the more conservative side, an increase in sales of prices of 6 to 9% per year. Do you know what it is for residential? Okay. So just to make that point, I don't feel that they are being affected by this COVID economic obsolescence. And my only other thing, and I'm thinking out loud here, and I'm not sure if this is correct. And
just go ahead. For simplicity, everyone's being affected by COVID.
Okay.
Everyone in the entire world. Sometimes, in some cases, it's positive. In more cases, it's negative. In some cases, it's neutral. Everyone's being affected, though. But anyway, I understand your point.
Okay.
But he's not wrong. That COVID has made a big change to the entire world, and it's continuing to do so.
Okay. So when I reviewed the market data that they collected, that's the additional 500 some odd pages in the back of their packet. Mm-hmm. One thing, and again, I'm not sure if my thinking is right, but this was data where they looked up and found what used equipment was selling for. And I would think that that should include any additional installation costs, which is what we look at, you know, when we look at original cost.
Well, he was saying this is a data sampling that backed up the study. So this is 500 pages out of, I believe he was saying, many thousands and thousands of data points.
Okay.
So this is just...
That is correct.
Yeah, this is just as sampling. And since we don't have the whole study, he probably has 5-10 pages talking about the study. In theory, I'll read through it. I have not read through it. Maybe you have and seen whether or not installation was included.
I don't believe it was.
Shipping, installation, and all the necessary costs to actually get it into use. I don't know whether it was or was not. I suspect the study is often used for tax appeals. Is that correct, petitioner? As far as you know? And what's the
correct. In terms of personal property appeals, that is correct.
Okay, all right. In which case, whether they did it right or not is debatable. I don't think we have the whole study to be able to look at the parameters.
Okay.
But they probably did, one way or another, try to put it in there because they knew they'd be here.
Okay.
But I don't know if I have the backup one way or the other, but I wouldn't necessarily assume that they didn't do that without reading the detail.
Okay.
You may. I mean, you can. I don't know. I have not read this package yet. I didn't get it until like an hour ago.
Right. Okay. No, I just want to bring that up for something
sure.
for you to look at.
Yep.
And that's all I have.
Okay. Petitioner, any rebuttal?
Yes, sir. A couple points to make specifically relating to, I know Melissa made a quick statement. And before I go into the rebuttal, I do want to extend some gratitude over to the property appraisal. Years, and we have been able to find an agreement over the past 3 years. It was just unfortunate events that came up that led us to this hearing, but we do appreciate all the work that they do. But in terms of rebuttal, there was a point that was made that stated that I don't want to take any words out of anybody's mouth, but we kind of made a presumption that they weren't looking to the market. As I've stated, I've worked with them in the past, and the tables that they are utilizing is from Marshall and Swift. And when they're utilizing the tables from the DOR, and when that occurs, that's how we present forth our evidence for one of two reasons, mainly because these tables do not include economic obsolescence. And if you're able to go to page 46.
Of your package or their package?
Our package. My package. Ryan's package.
Okay.
You'll see that Marshall at the very bottom talks about he directly states that any abnormal or excessive functional and any or all external obsolescence is considered separately and are not directly included in the tables, which is why we're here today. We're here to look for market value, and when economic obsolescence is not included, there is no way of determining market value, which is why those statements are also made.
Right.
And with that being said, that was the big rebuttal point that I wanted to hit upon.
Okay, and I don't want to put any words in the property appraiser's mouth either, but I do believe their discussion about your 40-some percent increase in sales is their support that negative economic obsolescence didn't necessarily affect this specific group of tangible personal property. I do believe that is their point. Is that, am I?
Yes.
Okay. So that, you know, I completely understand economic obsolescence. I actually enjoy doing those kinds of studies. So I get where you're coming from. I get where the property appraiser is coming from on that. And certainly I'll take it into account, the economic, all forms of obsolescence and depreciation. Go ahead, petitioner.
No, that was it. That was really the point. I understand that economic obsolescence, from my understanding, that support was directly related to COVID-19. But economic obsolescence, there are a variety of many factors, and a lot of those analyzing economic obsolescence. And just because a specific property is doing well doesn't necessarily mean that economic obsolescence isn't a factor, and that's stated here in our evidence. So with that being said, I will wrap up my rebuttal evidence, and please let me know if you have any questions or concerns.
Okay. I think I've talked through a lot of it. Obviously, when I have more time to read over the details of your baggage, I'll have more thoughts and ideas. But I think I've put out all the questions that I needed to analyze the data, so I appreciate everyone's help. I'm gathering the information so that an accurate and fair recommendation on this particular group of TPP can be made to the Value Adjustment Board. Everybody's package was very professional. And thank you very much. If there's no other further comments from anyone?
I'm good.
Okay. Then
no,
thank
sir.
You.
Thank you guys. Thank you everybody for your
thank
time.
You. I'm gonna go over the information in greater detail and make my determination at that time. That concludes petition 134. Thanks.
Thanks.